It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies and 61 degrees, 78% humidity, east winds to 8 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility out at the airport right now. They're calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 62, calm winds turning to the southeast to 5 miles per hour later this afternoon. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low around 51. Southeast winds to 5, turning completely calm this evening. Coming up on the Midday Report, wildfire activity continues to escalate across the state. Alaskans will have their first chance at ranked choice voting next month. There was a record single-day harvest at Nooshigak in Bristol Bay. 2.46 million fish were caught on Thursday. And the commercial Dungeness crab fishery in Southeast is not doing so well. Those stories and more after headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The death toll from yesterday's mass shooting in Highland Park, Illinois, is now up to 7. Authorities confirmed the latest fatality a short time ago. 7 deaths and more than 30 people wounded after the gunmen fired on crowds, including children who were attending a 4th of July parade. Christopher Covelli, a spokesman for the Lake County Major Crime Task Force, shared what police learned in the last 24 hours about the suspect, Robert Cremo III.
We do believe Cremo pre-planned this attack for several weeks. He brought a high-powered rifle to this parade. He accessed the roof of a business via a fire escape ladder and began opening fire on the innocent Independence Day celebration goers.
NPR's Odette Youssef says the alleged shooter built a large digital footprint on social media. Extremism researchers say it fits with an emerging profile of mass shooters who are immersed in certain online subcultures.
The social media presence clearly shows a fascination with violence, but it also suggests a blurring of real life with fiction. Alex Newhouse of the Middlebury Institute of International Studies says this is part of certain online subcultures that revolve around alternate realities.
It is all designed to be, one, shared, two, completely incomprehensible to anyone like us who are looking onto it, and three, to be a way of breaking down a person's natural reluctance to commit violence.
The alleged shooter was a rap artist who posted his music and videos on platforms including YouTube, Twitter, Blogspot, and more. Odette Youssef, NPR News.
President Biden's ordered flags on all federal buildings lowered to half staff in honor of the victims. The president presented 4 Vietnam War veterans with a Medal of Honor today. NPR's Scott Detrow reports the ceremony upgraded earlier recognitions the men had received for their courage under fire.
Biden framed the ceremony as correcting the historical record so that the 4 men could earn the recognition he said they had long deserved.
More than 50 years have passed, 50 years since the jungles of Vietnam, where as young men these soldiers first proved their mettle. But time has not diminished their astonishing bravery.
After recounting the men's various actions, Biden draped the nation's highest military honor around the necks of Specialist Dwight Birdwell, Specialist Dennis Fujii, and Major John Duffy. Staff Sergeant Edward Kaneshiro died during the Vietnam War, so his son accepted the award from President Biden on his behalf. Scott Detrow, NPR News, The White House.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 129 points, ending the day at 30,967. The S&P was up 6 points, and before the close, the Nasdaq was up 194. It's NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Wildfire activity continues to escalate in Alaska. The state logged another 20-plus new fires on Monday, raising the number of active fires to 214, as thousands of lightning strikes were again detected across a wide area from South Central to the interior and northern Alaska. Among the new lightning-caused starts were two fires in the Delta Junction area responded to on Monday. State Forestry Fire Information Officer Sam Harrell says the Gold Hub Fire and the Giles Creek Fire are in full suppression zones in the vicinity of the Pogo Gold Mine north of Delta, and both blazes were hit with retardant and water drops.
And a lot of this aerial effort is just to slow them down and check them up until we can get crews in there to do some work.
Harrell says the Gold Hub Fire is located along Shaw Creek Road, which accesses the Pogo Mine.
It's going to have an impact on mine traffic that utilizes the Shaw Creek Road.
The Gold Hub Fire was estimated at 1,000 acres as of Monday night.
It is rapidly spreading. It's fuel-driven. A lot of black spruce up there, and it's working its way through the black spruce pretty good.
The new blazes are, in addition to others in the area, being managed as the Middle Tanana Complex. With so many wildfires burning across the state, Harrell says many in remote areas are only being monitored.
And then give them attention when they start to move on to, you know, values at risk, whether it's timber, native allotments, cabins out in the woods. So it's a lot of monitoring and making decisions about where our resources are going to best be served.
While some new fires are drawing initial attack, longer-term responses continue on about a dozen others. The largest operation is on the over 50,000-acre Clear Fire west of Anderson, where fire behavior analyst Forrest Ownby says burn activity has increased the last couple of days.
Anytime that the sky clears or the smoke leaves and the clouds leave or dissipate, our fire behavior increases, meaning that we have trees that start to torch, the fire starts to spread faster.
Ownby says one of the more active parts of the fire is west of the Kobe Ag Road turnoff and Clear Space Force Station.
And then as you keep going south along the Teklanique River, the fire has a big head going south there where a lot of activity has continued to move towards the Alaska Range going south there. But staying lower on the foothills, it hasn't really started climbing.
Ownby says protective measures include cutting lines with bulldozers and preparing properties in case flames get past them.
Like in the city of Anderson, they're going around a lot of the structures and trying to remove some of the fuel. So the trees, you limb them up, you space them out a little bit. So if the fire comes through, it won't destroy the homes and all of that.
Ownby says the fire was estimated to be about 2 miles west of Anderson and Clear Space Force Station as of Monday. He says activity is expected to moderate over the next couple of days as higher humidity and slightly cooler temperatures are forecast. Evacuation notices remain in effect for some areas surrounding the Clear Fire. But Denali Borough Mayor Clay Walker says it's unclear how many people have left.
There are some in the go area that we know who are actively preparing their properties and creating more defensibility. And there are others who've left, and we're not tracking, you know, individuals. It's kind of an area where there's folks who live there year round and folks who have cabins there and come and go.
Mayor Walker emphasizes that no one is being forced to evacuate, but says those in the go area who remain are doing so at their own risk. He says there's been little use of the Nanana and Tri-Valley schools as evacuation sites.
A lot of Alaskans have other options from, you know, pulling their camper out and going camping for a while or staying with friends. Or we know some folks have gone up to Fairbanks. You know, I think people are employing, you know, other options other than staying at a school. Because, yeah, we did just have one person spend one night at Tri-Valley School.
Walker says the clear fire does not seem to be impacting tourism, as smoke has been intermittent at the Denali National Park to the south, and visitor numbers are up. Walker says the clear fire does not seem to be impacting tourism, as smoke has been intermittent at Denali National Park to the south, and visitor numbers are up. He thanks the firefighters working on the clear fire, noting that despite its growth, no structures have been lost. Governor Mike Dunleavy's vetoes to the state budget earlier last week included slashing roughly $10.5 million in funding for the Alaska Long Trail project. That project would span roughly 500 miles and connect Seward to Fairbanks via what's called a braided trail, mixing a series of walkable paths as well as paths accessible by four-wheelers and snow machines. Mariam Medavaya works with Alaska Trails, a nonprofit trail-building group that's been spearheading the project for about a year and a half. She says her group put a proposal to the legislature for roughly $14 million that would fund 15 projects along the main trail route. She says seven of those projects, totaling about $4 million, survived the governor's vetoes. The funds will go to several Anchorage land managers.
They will include a lot of trail improvements, trail construction, some planning money for connections between Anchorage and Matsuboro.
The projects that were vetoed were outside Anchorage, included pieces of the trail in the Matsu, Denali, and Fairbanks North Star boroughs. In a statement, Dunleavy spokesman Jeff Turner said the governor felt many Alaskans had little information about the project. Turner wrote, quote, "The governor decided to veto some of the funding so discussions can take place this year about the trail's potential impacts and benefits for Alaska's tourism industry," end quote. Medavaya says she understands the governor's hesitation and fiscal reasoning for the cuts. She says she remains optimistic since almost half of the Alaska Long Trail projects remained in the budget.
And we already see a lot of support and momentum from many bipartisan entities, organizations, agencies across the state. But that said, there's still a lot of people don't know about it, and there's still a lot of hesitation and some concerns and fears of losing access.
Alaska Trails looks forward to working with the state over the next year to get the remaining projects funded in the next budget. The state budget signed by Governor Mike Dunleavy earlier this week for fiscal year 2023 also included $15 million for Kodiak's new fire station. The city had previously received $7 million to replace Kodiak's aging firehouse from the federal omnibus spending package that was passed earlier this spring. That money had been allocated by the late Congressman Don Young. The city of Kodiak now has $22 million to put toward the project. The state budget also includes a funding boost for other infrastructure projects in Kodiak, including the state-run Benny Benson Airport, which will receive $27 million for upgrades and improvements, and another $4.7 million will go toward paving a one-mile stretch of Otmaloy Way. In Bristol Bay, the Nooshigak District broke a record for the largest single-day harvest. Fisherfolk caught 2.46 million salmon on Thursday. As KDLG's Brian Venois reports, that's more than a half million fish over the former daily harvest record, which was set last year.
The district had back-to-back record harvests exactly 1 year ago when fleets caught 1.7 million fish on June 30th and 1.82 million on July 1st. Fishing game area management biologist Tim Sands says the trend for runs like this is relatively recent, but has become a regular occurrence.
It wasn't until 2017 that we ever really broke a million sockeye salmon harvest in a day, and that was amazing. And then it was happening every year. Now to break 2 million is just wow.
Port Muller technicians predicted a big run would hit the bay this weekend. Sands says a pattern has emerged over the last few years. Big runs hit the district around June 26, followed by a lull, then another peak around June 30 and July 1.
When we saw the forecast for the wind on the 30th, I was telling people, hey, that's going to be the day, you know, the fish are going to show up then, and they did.
Port Muller numbers indicate the district runs will stay high for another few days, but San says he is unsure if the record will be broken again anytime soon.
I think if you ever use June 30th, 2022 as the bar, things will always be slower. But I think it's still good fishing out there. My guess is we will catch more than a million fish again today.
Tyone Raymond fishes on the fishing vessel Mr. Fox in the Nishigak District. He says fishing has been great despite the terrible weather.
We were out fishing all day and all night, and it was blowing pretty hard. Fish were just piling in.
And while Bristol Bay's sockeye runs are breaking records, king runs up the Nishigak have been weak. Raymond says he and his crew try to help Chinook escape.
Whenever we see some big kings come in, we check immediately to see if they're alive. And if they're alive, we put them right back over the side in the hopes that they might go up and increase their escapement numbers.
While Port Muller numbers indicate strong runs this weekend, that pace may slow down next week. In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venois.
The commercial Dungeness crab fishery in southeast Alaska will close early this summer because the start of the season has been so slow. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning has this report.
In recent years, Dungeness crabbing has been pretty great for commercial fishermen in southeast. The harvests and prices have been above average, sometimes way above. Last year saw the second highest harvest on record and the highest price ever paid. The summer season was worth $13 million. But this year looks different. The season opened on June 15th. About 200 fishermen registered in the region, and they've reported poor fishing.
I've heard generally it's slow. Region-wide.
Joe Stratman is with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and he's the lead biologist for shellfish in the region. He says the estimate for this summer season is just about 2 million pounds, which is less than what's needed for a full-length season. It doesn't come close to recent years.
The poundage landed in the first week of the fishery was about 433,000 pounds, which was not quite half of what was landed in the first week, the last summer season, 2021.
Because of the slow start, it was announced on June 29th that the season would close 2 weeks early at the end of July. The state manages the fishery according to harvests and sampling in season only. There is no other data gathered throughout the year. Managers look at what the first week of the fishery was like and predict the overall season harvest estimate and decide how long the season should be. Prices for dungies have plummeted this year. Processors are paying around $2.79 a pound compared to last year's $4.21 a pound. Still, the current price is around the 10-year average. It's only the third time in the last 20 years that the season has been shortened. Stratman says the downturn could be part of a natural cycle.
You know, those kind of fluctuations in harvest are pretty common in Alaska and in other places. It's possible that this year the below-average catch rates are due to smaller-than-usual cohort of crab recruiting into the fishery, but there could be environmental factors as well.
Those factors could be a couple of things. Fishermen started the season off with huge daily tides, moving 24 feet twice a day. Also, crabs molt or regrow their shells once a year as adults. Crabs with soft shells aren't kept. Stratman says water temperature was colder than normal, which could have affected that.
So that may be playing a part in the molt timing or maybe making crab less active. These are all possibilities.
The first week's catch also means that, as of now, the fall season will be cut in half for most of the region, lasting only 1 month. That could change if the State Department determines that a lot of soft-shelled crab contributed to the low numbers. Stratman says they'll make the decision on the fall season in mid-August. The fall fishery starts October 1st. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
As Alaskans approach their first ranked choice election next month, they're wrestling with the concept of ranking. The Division of Elections says ballots will still count if a voter only chooses one candidate as a favorite. But economist Kevin Berry says that would be a mistake. He advises ranking candidates, even the ones who don't align with your views.
When you're voting in the second, or for your second and third and fourth candidate, you're trying to minimize the maximum harm.
Berry says that's a strategy known in game theory as minimax. In plainer words, the lesser of the perceived evils. Or, he says, voters who just like one candidate might assign second and lower ranks to those they think might be better at things like constituent services. The new system, Barry says, poses tougher questions to voters.
In the past, we just kind of said, you know, who the candidates are is settled by a partisan primary, and then what team am I on, and I vote for that team. Now we need to think really hard about who these candidates are. And even amongst the people we disagree with, who would at least be the best at answering my phone call?
The special election for U.S. House will be the first conducted by ranked choice voting. That election is August 16th. It's also the day of the Pick One primary for all the other state races.
Insight Daily Radio. Iconic guitarist Eric Clapton's lifelong passion for the blues burns brightly in a new film and soundtrack release entitled Nothing But the Blues. The documentary film, which was nominated for an Emmy Award but was broadcast only once in the U.S. in 1995, has been upgraded to 4K for its long-awaited official Blu-ray and DVD release. The new soundtrack album features all of the music from the 1995 film and also includes more than an hour of previously unreleased live performances recorded in 1994 during the legendary guitarist tour supporting From the Cradle, his Grammy-winning multi-platinum blues album. Eric spoke about his lifelong love and respect for the blues and its impact on his playing.
Muddy's songs have been the hardest. And I probably... He meant a great deal to me, and his music still does mean probably more than anybody else's. I don't know why. It was the first, really, that got to me, and it still is the most important music in my life today is the music of Muddy Waters, and it's been the hardest. It's some kind of perfectionism in me that I love this man so much that I want to do it absolutely perfectly, and of course that's not possible.
That's iconic guitarist Eric Clapton, whose long-awaited documentary film and music soundtrack, Nothing But the Blues, will be released on multiple formats on June 24th. There's more at ericclapton.com. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday that feels kind of like a Monday. It is the fifth day of July, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:18. It will set again at 11:09. That will give us 17 hours and 52 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 1 minute and 59 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 78 degrees set in 1999, and a record low was 38 set in 1938 and 1971. Currently 61 degrees outside, although we're showing 66 up here at the station, according to the thermometer clamped to the now sunny tiny back porch. It's expected to stay partly sunny for the rest of the day, and turn to mostly cloudy tonight. Low around 51 overnight tonight with southeast winds to 5, becoming completely calm. 30% chance of rain for tomorrow, mainly after 4 p.m. Increasing clouds tomorrow with a high near 58. And rain is likely beginning on Wednesday night. That rain is expected to continue at least through Friday night, where it will be replaced by just a chance of rain. Those conditions are going to go through Monday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up very quickly here on the east side at 12:45 this afternoon. That will be a 0.3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:26 this afternoon of 6.9 feet. Our low tide for the middle of the night here on the east side will be at 1:16 a.m. and be 2.5 feet, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning at 7:03 a.m. of 6.4 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:11 p.m. That will be a 0.9-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:50 this evening of 12 feet in Larson Bay. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 1:55 a.m. and be 4 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 7:42 a.m. and be 10.5 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side. West winds to 15 knots today, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, south 15, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 15 today and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable winds to 10 knots, seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. Let's see what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 12. This announcement was issued at 10 a.m. July 4th. There will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, July 6th, to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 9th, in the following areas: the Outer Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, except the Kijuyak Bay, Uganik Bay, and Zacher Bay sections will remain closed, the Northeast Kodiak District, the East Side Kodiak District, except Pisagshack Bay will remain closed, and closed waters for Saltry Creek are normal closed waters as described in regulation, and the Afognak District, except the Duck Bay section will close at 9 p.m. Friday, July 8th, and the Iqaluit Bay and Inner and Outer Kodoi Bay sections will remain closed. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, July 6th, to 9 p.m. Friday, July 8th, in the following areas: the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, the Outer Iqaluit and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Mainland District, and the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District. After 12:01 a.m. July 6th, until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following areas currently open until further notice will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Saturday, July 9th: the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Saturday, July 9th, in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek. Cost recovery fisheries have begun in the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will be dependent on the ability to meet KRAA cost recovery needs. Cost recovery information can be obtained by calling 486-6559. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
Senior Citizens of Kodiak is in need of brown paper bags. Please feel free to drop them off at the Senior Center between 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. The Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their monthly meeting at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening tonight at 5:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting. That's happening in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Both meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the borough clerk for more information at 907-486-9310. And the Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee will be having a meeting. That's scheduled for this Friday. The meeting will begin at 9 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. This meeting is open to the public, and agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website, where the meeting will also be web-streamed. For additional information, call the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.